Hi, welcome to Female Trouble. I'm Quinn Kelly, and this is a podcast spotlighting women in Baltimore. This week I talked to Lane Harlan, who owns the bar W.C. Harlan and the restaurant Clavel, both of which are in Baltimore's Remington neighborhood. Lane has captured and held the attention of locals who are interested in cocktails and dining out ever since she opened W.C. Harlan in 2013, because she's done things pretty unconventionally. W.C. Harlan is a candlelit, antique-filled, speakeasy-inspired bar on an unassuming corner in Remington, without a sign on the front or a website. That bar gained popularity entirely by word of mouth, and Lane followed it with a Mexican-inspired restaurant, Clavel, that she opened down the street from W.C. Harlan last year. Clavel does have a sign and a website, as well as a menu of simple dishes inspired by the chef's family from Sinaloa, and an impressive selection of mezcals. Lane was born in the Philippines and has been traveling her whole life, and we talked about how those travels and how her time living in France have shaped her worldview and inspired her business ventures. We also talked about some of the challenges of getting people to take a young businesswoman seriously, and about her ambition and confidence in her unique and seemingly risky ideas that have ultimately paid off. Here's our conversation. How are you, Lane?
Hi, I'm fine. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for coming in. I guess we will go all the way back to the beginning. Where are you from originally?
So originally, I was born in the Philippines. My father was in the military, and he was stationed in the Philippines. He met my mother there. And I was born in an Air Force base, and I moved around a lot in my childhood, military style, moving every 2 to 4 years. So I moved around quite a bit, places like North Dakota, New Mexico, California, Texas, Florida, just kind of everywhere. I ended up in Maryland in the middle of my eighth grade year, and went to high school, graduated in 3 years, and went to UMBC. So that's actually what brought me to the Baltimore area.
You graduated in 3 years.
Yeah.
How were you able to do that in high school?
Basically, if you're ambitious, you can take summer classes. And in my freshman year in high school, I was taking all AP classes. And then over the summer, I was doing the actual literature class that you needed in your 12th grade year. And I had taken all the other APs that you needed to take anyway. So I kind of just did a summer and then finished. I never really had a senior year. Or maybe I had a senior year, but I skipped my junior year.
Did you enjoy school?
Yes and no. I mean, I enjoyed the subjects that I was interested in. I enjoyed liberal arts aspects of school, but I very much wanted to get out of school. I couldn't wait to be on my own, and I think I rushed the process because I wanted to be more, have more responsibilities and choices, and go to college and live on my own, basically. So moved to, let's see, I took a semester off after I graduated high school. So I must have been 18 when I started working in Baltimore to pay for college, of course. And I was living in Bolton Hill and going to UMBC and just commuting. My first job was at the Brass Elephant, which was a historical restaurant on Charles Street. They're actually renovating it now into something new. But that was definitely a big intro for me into fine dining and wine. And, you know, I wasn't really old enough to be a server. I didn't have the experience, so they let me be the busboy. I sort of just cleared tables and did dishes and hung out in the basement and made butter. So
did you get that job because you had an interest in restaurants, or it was just a job that would pay you?
I had an interest in, well, one, it was the old building that kind of pulled me into that place specifically, which it was a beautiful fine dining restaurant, and it certainly was above my experience level, but I so badly wanted to be in that place because it was so aesthetically beautiful and so historical, and there was an allure to that, and so I kind of pressed my way in at the bottom at a pretty young age.
How do you think your transitory nature, your transitory childhood influenced you today, if at all?
Well, it definitely, you know, I travel a lot, and so that's a big part of my life, and when you travel, you gain so much inspiration from just the sheer ability to gain perspective on the world and to sort of look back on where you live and see it with different eyes. So when I travel, I'm often picking up on what people are eating, what they're drinking, what they look like, what they do, what the restaurants and bars are like, what they have that we don't have, and what I like about those things. And I draw inspiration from it all. And so when I come back, I have a fresh perspective, and I've sort of questioned everything that I've done, and I start to change things. So I'm not afraid of change. That's certainly something that I've gotten from traveling my entire life, is that I agree with change. And I'm always, always very critical and always trying to change things. And Baltimore is absolutely my home. I've been here over 10 years now. I've deeply rooted here. I don't want to move anywhere, but I do love to travel. And it'll be a nice home base for me to sort of travel and then come back to. I work really hard here. I work very constantly, owning two businesses, and it's a 24-hour job, but I go out of town as frequently as I can so that I can separate in a way and gain inspiration and energy to come back and do what I do.
You've had other creative careers and endeavors in the past, is that right?
Yes. I studied French in college, and I always wrote poetry and was interested in reading and writing. When I was, I think, you know, my second year in college, I studied abroad in France. I went to Aix-en-Provence in the south. And I definitely got a sentimental education there, I would say, surrounded by a culture that embraces the arts over other things, American ideals, for one, and sort of embraces people who are poets or musicians in a way that is more than just for money's sake. It's kind of in a pleasure way, a pleasure-seeking way. And so, studying there, I didn't do that well in school. I actually learned more French just from hanging out with people and not going to class. But, you know, I was supposed to go back after a semester, and I ended up meeting someone and going to Paris and then not coming home and, you know, making my family very nervous. But I moved to Paris, and I had a really beautiful experience there. And definitely felt like I had a French sensibility in terms of really loving to take my time eating and drinking and being very like slow living, as opposed to the American sort of very fast paced capitalistic way of life that we do have and that I so often fall into. But that was like my first step into really focusing on eating and drinking and being really aware of it, embracing it as something just that's not just about sustenance, but about really enjoying life. And then I ended up getting a teaching job in France, and I moved back there to a little town called Saintes, which is in the Charente-Maritime. It's very close to Bordeaux and very close to Cognac. So it's just a very little small town. And teaching there for a year, I had a lot of free time. So I did a lot of reading. I did a lot of writing. I wrote a lot of poetry. And got a lot of ideas about what I wanted to do when I got home, which was create something of my own so that I could be my own boss, do something I'm passionate about, which is to create, and also have time to have the pleasures in life of sort of traveling and writing and reflecting and also reading. Now, this was a very idealistic thing, because when you run businesses, you do not have much time to read. But I certainly have the means now to travel and to take a little break and to see the world, which is something that I've always wanted to do.
Do you see any of those French qualities of slow living and enjoying fine dining and drinking in Baltimore? And why did you decide to stay here?
You know, one thing about it is that Baltimore, I think a big decision staying here was the arts community, and that arts community being extremely a very thriving community because of Baltimore not being a very expensive place to live. And you know, things are changing as they do everywhere, but still, for the most part, real estate is pretty cheap, and if you can have your rent not kill you, then you have more time, less working and more time to create things, which isn't always a fast process. Sometimes it is, sometimes it's not. And I find that the more you work, the more you are taken away from yourself, because you're giving yourself to others. And that's how the service industry really is. So I think in terms of Baltimore, yes, the slow living is definitely there in a way, but you have to kind of remember it and you have to grab it.
Do you find it difficult to separate or to have the work-life balance or to pull away from work when you need that time to yourself?
It's quite difficult. You know, WC Harlan is, it's moving pretty quickly towards its fourth year. And so it is much, if I just had WC Harlan, then such would be the case. But having been a very ambitious person and having more passions and more creativity and wanting to put it into these businesses. I opened Clavel with Carlos Raba, who is the chef and co-owner, and my husband Matthew. And that was a great endeavor because it was much bigger than just a bar. When you have a restaurant, you have, you know, much more, just a higher level of work and control that has to go into creating a space like this for people to eat. That's just a completely different level. So that takes on a lot more of you. There's a lot more decision making, and it's a much bigger space. It's like three times the size of WC Harlan, and the staff at Harlan is so small, whereas at Clavel, I mean, there's so many moving parts. We have over 35 employees over there. So certainly over the past year, being such a young business, it's been very hard to find time for myself. But, you know, that's where traveling comes into play, because sometimes I go places and my phone doesn't even work and I can sort of shut off after a couple days and then just check the email, you know, whenever I remember that there are people that rely on me at home. But if I'm in town, it's quite difficult. I tend to work and then go home and work more. And sometimes at 10 o'clock at night, my bed is covered in calendars and ideas and crumpled papers. And but I've answered all my emails and everybody's scheduled and everything's ordered and it's good. But yeah, it's definitely a growing thing. And as businesses grow, you know, you delegate more and more and you start to do less administrative things and do more big picture things. And that's where I see myself in the next 5 years is overseeing more and being able to make ideas into reality, as opposed to spending most of my time doing administrative things and managing and sort of rushing the creative process. So I'm kind of at WC Harlan, that is what I do now. We have a fabulous, fabulous manager there. Her name's Pam Hainer. She's a very good friend of mine. And she is insanely creative, and finding people like that, but at Clavel in the long run, would be great, so that I could sort of balance things and put more creative into it.
For those who don't know, you are also, I think it's fair to say, a young business person. Where does that sense of ambition and drive come from?
Well, I guess you could say I'm still quite young. It's so funny because no one ever asks my age anymore, and then I kind of always forget when it does happen. But I'm 29, and I think that I've always been, I don't know that if it was ambitious when I was younger, but certainly had a lot of energy and confidence, which I think when you have a level of confidence, it allows you to share your ideas, and to, once you've sort of created something from an idea and it works, you just never stop. You just keep going. And I suppose I just have a lot of desires to create things in this community. And I don't really see it stopping anytime soon because I found an outlet.
So let's go back to your table busing days. How did you get from that to bar owner to restaurant owner?
So, you know, starting at the Brass Elephant, starting as a busser, busboy, I guess they called me. I worked at a place called Roy's in the harbor. It's still there. It's a corporate place. It's a Hawaiian fusion cuisine sort of place. But for me, you know, going into a place that, first of all, Brass Elephant closed, and that's why I moved jobs. But I knew somebody that worked at Roy's, and I think just by knowing somebody, I thought it'd be easier to get a job, and it turned out being much easier. I was a hostess there, and that structure taught me a little bit more of the bones of being in a fast-paced restaurant with different tiers of management and roles and just steps of service. I went very quickly from being a host there to a server, to food runner and a server, and never really having much interest in the bar at that time, but you know, when you work in Harbor East, you kind of just want to leave to go somewhere else because it's such a high volume sort of grind place. We end up after work in Fells Point or, you know, I'd go to Station North area, which didn't even have that name then, but end up at Club Charles at the end of the night and in more of those style of bars. But I think I learned the steps of service really working kind of in a corporate place. Also learned what I don't like and ways that I wouldn't run a business and wouldn't manage a business from working in a corporate place. So I think from having that experience, I had moved on. I found a place that was the opposite of corporate. It was just a little, I would say, mom and pop place, although the owners are quite young. But chef and now wife owned a place called Jack's Bistro in Canton. And I think once again, I knew somebody there and I got a job there as a server. And in that place, I learned a lot. I took on a lot more responsibility because it's if you have a what I think is like a 50 seat restaurant and it's owned by the people working in it and they're making the decisions with you and you just have a lot more responsibility. There's less bureaucracy and less overhead. So I took on a lot more roles there and sort of wiggled my way into the bar, which was exciting for me because they were creative with their menu. They actually had cocktails that weren't, you know, a pina colada or tequila sunrise. They had creative names and creative ingredients. And once I got behind the bar, I just kind of went crazy with it. And I felt like I had total freedom to do whatever I wanted. I would not actually say I'll take back total, but some freedom. What made me really want to create my own place was that I needed to, without question, do what I had in my mind. I wanted to do things that I didn't want somebody above me. I didn't want to have to ask. I just had so much energy and so much fire. I wanted to create my own thing in the aesthetic that I love, that is natural to me. And so W.C. Harlan was really born out of feeling like I had these experiences and I had this knowledge, but I had a ton of curiosity and I really wanted the independence to do my own thing. And so, I mean, the aesthetic of W.C. Harlan, it came out of my husband now, who was my boyfriend at the time. We had a little studio apartment on Monument Street in Mount Vernon. And it was just covered in antiques. And it was just like the little dusty studio apartment. I don't really know how we lived there as long as we did. But looking back on it, it was a really beautiful thing. We took every mirror and every painting off the wall and we created W.C. Harlan with a small group of friends and family. So that was natural to me. And that was something that it was a space where I could create freely.
Did you have any kind of moment where it all clicked and you're like, oh, this makes sense. I'm meant to open a bar, or where your direction became clear to you?
I think it became clear once I got back from France the second time because, you know, living in France and teaching, I had a salary, which was really nice because it was like getting paid every month. You know, I'm not working a ton of hours a week. I'm doing something that's really beautiful and I'm living in France and all is well. But coming back to Baltimore and just feeling like, wow, I'm working in restaurants. I'm not the great at school. I don't want to go back to school. What am I going to do? Teach poetry? I'd have to go back to school for that. Just write poetry. I'll be so broke. My husband is a full-time musician and an artist. And it's like kind of having that awakening of, do I want to be working the grind or do I want to take my creativity and my passion and ideas and turn it into something that can actually, I can make a living from and other people could too. So, you know, we started looking in Highlandtown actually for a space just because I had friends over there and I wanted to open a gallery and a bar and it ended up falling apart, but for the best. So my husband he works in a music studio sometimes, which is in Remington right around the corner from W.C. Harlan. And just being in that area, seeing the for sale sign on a bar that had been completely neglected over the years, but it had been a bar since 1934. And you go in and the bar, the first, like, I think it's about 80% of the bar is original mahogany. At some point, someone had added an extension, but it is, for the most part, an original mahogany Art Deco bar, and it's still in there, and that's a really beautiful thing. It could be nothing but a bar, but it was being sold as a house because the person that had it before, you know, one thing, you know, I'm not going to get into the details, but the license died and the place was sitting abandoned for a couple years. And so when I inquired about the space and learned all of that, I just had this huge feeling of, I am going to make this a bar again. I'm going to do everything I can to get the licensing back. This cannot be a house. This is historical. This is crazy. How could this happen? So I just, through the advice of people in the neighborhood, started knocking on doors, getting a petition signed. there's about 110 houses in what's that little alcove of Remington, which is called the Old Fawcett neighborhood. We had over 70 signatures, and a lot of the people didn't even answer the doors. We had no no's from the immediate neighbors, and I just started going to the neighborhood associations and asking for help and trying to explain to people what I wanted to do. And a lot of people didn't really understand, but a lot of people took a leap and signed my petition. And when we had our hearing, most people said, you can't make a dead license alive again, but we did. And so just that was inspiring itself for us, and we knew it was right. When we had that hearing, it was an incredible feat for us, and we had all the energy in the world to make it what it is.
The interiors for W.C. Harlan and Clavel are very distinct and unique. How would you describe those and your visions for each of the spaces for people who haven't been there?
W.C. Harlan, I would say, is pretty unassuming from the outside. It looks just like a little row home amongst a very industrial area. There are train tracks nearby. There's a playground in the back for a neighborhood playground. Big stone buildings across the street. Just looks like a rundown row home. Then you go in the side door, and I think it's very much turn of the last century, candles, low lit, built definitely to make you feel like you're in another time, in another place. I wouldn't say there is much of a theme. I think it's more of a feel when you go inside. No TVs, a place where you can have a conversation and a cold beer or cocktail if that suits you. Definitely old world. Clavel is quite different. Clavel, the building itself, the ceilings are much higher. It's airy. It's very bright and more modern, filled with plants and light. It's built to sort of feel like an outdoor courtyard in Mexico, somewhere, you know, where you would celebrate with family and friends. Lots of communal tables, as well as outdoor seating, and we have sort of like outdoor celebration lights hanging from the ceiling. So there's a lot of white with the contrast of green, and then, of course, natural materials. We have local potters create pottery for us. A local potter and artist named Anna Crooks actually had designed a lot of our planters and even cocktail glasses, bowls, salsa bowls. Everything is made by her. And also another artisan, Irene Donnelly, had created a lot of planters for us. Other than that, mostly things that I've brought back from my travels to Oaxaca, textiles. I would say the space is pretty sparse and airy.
I'm curious how the interiors for both of the spaces inform what is served there and vice versa. And did you have a vision for the interiors of the spaces before the food and drinks came along, or how did that pan out?
They go hand in hand, but the first thing for me was always the substance of what it was, the food. I mean, the food and the drinks. What it is that we want people to consume and why. And, you know, it took us a couple years to really figure out that we were going to open a restaurant. I never thought I would. I always thought it would be another bar, because I have a passion for drinks and for mixing drinks and experimenting with drinks and creating drinks. And I couldn't imagine opening something that wasn't authentic. I would never. But it just so happened that, you know, in my family, my sister's partner is from Sinaloa and his brother is our chef. So we were family. We've been going to Mexico together for years, and it just came together. It was 2013 when I opened W.C. Harlan. And that year, my husband and I went to Oaxaca just on a trip. And the year before, I was in Sinaloa for Christmas with my family. And sort of the seeds started getting planted when I became very passionate about mezcal, which happened instantly as soon as I went to Oaxaca that first time. I remember bringing mezcal back to W.C. Harlan, and I brought some clay vessels, and I was just giving it out for free because I just wanted people to try it, to try this beautiful mezcal I brought back. And I remember being behind the bar and having all my regulars come in, and we're talking about mezcal, and everyone's drinking this mezcal, and it was really exciting. But at the time, there wasn't mezcal available. I mean, that wasn't industrial. I mean, in the world, absolutely. You could get it, you know, in New York and Chicago and San Francisco, of course, but at the Baltimore liquor stores, there was nothing, and nobody had it or was talking about it at the time. So I just I really fell for it. And then over time, it stayed with me, thinking, oh, I want to learn more about it. And then I want to teach people about it. I want to share it. I want to share these experiences. And then when I got serious about it, it just clicked to me that Carlos, who is an incredible chef, and just always cooked at our family outings and everything, and cooks the recipes of his aunts and his grandmother. And he was raised by his aunts and his grandmother. And so we collaborated, and that's how Clavel was born. And from that, the aesthetic of all my memories and everything I've loved from going to Oaxaca, that's what created the space. It was wanting an outdoor space in a place where you couldn't necessarily have it. So we made the room look sort of like an outdoor courtyard.
What have some of the challenges been of not having formal training in business or in the culinary arts?
Challenges in business. Well, one, just getting started. And originally when I wanted the help of somebody to build out a space in Highland Town, just having the feeling that somebody's looking across the room at me like I'm just a young girl with a bunch of ideas, and that it's, you know, just feeling like I'm not being taken seriously. I remember going to these meetings before we found the space for WC Harlan. I remember sitting in my car, putting on glasses, putting my hair back in a bun, and taking a bunch of deep breaths and just hoping that this person wouldn't see me as like, who is this young, hip, you know, whatever, and actually listen to me and listen to what I'm saying and trust me. And that was definitely hard because it's quite a male-dominated industry, the industry that I'm in. I even remember telling people when we did find WC Harlan that I was opening a bar, and people being like, oh yeah, well, you're going to need help, so just here's my number. And kind of a weird, and sort of having a almost like, oh, this is not going to work out, who do you think you are sort of thing. But whereas I feel like if I were a guy, it would have been totally different. But you know, you overcome and you show them. And I think we really did. In terms of food, I don't cook the food at Clavel. I definitely put my ideas and collaborate. So what I'm very good at is collaborating with people. It's very natural to me. And Carlos and I mean, we see each other every single day. And every single thing on the menu is a collaboration. There's nothing on the menu that hasn't been in the eyes and minds and mouths of everybody on our team at Clavel. So we collaborate, but mostly just doing the bar and finding ways to connect the bar and the kitchen and not wasting things, using the same ingredients. And I feel like we're really good at that. We're really good at not making waste and collaborating on a daily basis.
What are the roles that you feel least and most comfortable with in the span of all of your owner duties, I guess?
Most comfortable with managing the staff. Most comfortable with making the people feel comfortable and respected and like they have the tools to do what they need to do, and making them understand that their opinion matters and that I'm constantly consulting with them, constantly doing menus and tastings and everything collectively. If I want to do a mezcal tasting, I'm with the bartender saying, who wants to teach this with me? Who wants to talk about, you know, sustainability within the mezcal industry? Who wants to talk about the different farming methods, the different reproduction of agaves, and sort of assigning roles and delegating things and bringing people together? And then, of course, when it comes to the aesthetic of the space and of the menus, I'm very happy and I love creating spaces and changing them and looking at the design on how things can be made better or more authentic, and putting a lot of creative ideas into the beverage program. What I'm least comfortable with are things that I've delegated to other people, such as accounting. Accounting is definitely not my forte. I've never been a numbers person. So I put a lot of trust and a lot of work into our accountant. You know, things that I'm not interested in numbers.
What does authenticity mean to you? Because I've kind of heard both sides of the coin, I feel like. Some people want to strive to be as close to what they're emulating as possible, and others seem to say there's no way it can be Northern Mexican cuisine, for example, because it's not Northern, right?
Yeah, there's a different terroir involved. For me, it's belief. It's believing in what you're doing is coming from somewhere that is within you. So even though Carlos is cooking food inspired by his aunt, his grandmother, from, you know, growing up in Sinaloa, of course the food is going to be different because we're sourcing things from a different place. He's not his aunt and his grandmother. He has memories. He's created those and they're within him, and he believes in them. And that's authenticity to me.
I'm curious about the evolution of both W.C. Harlan and of Remington and where the bar and restaurant are located. Seems like back in the early days when W.C. Harlan started in 2013, it was much more secretive, word of mouth. And obviously the way word of mouth works is that, of course, more people know about it now. But have you shifted your goals with W.C. Harlan at all? How have you adapted and changed? And how have you seen the neighborhood adapt and change since the bar opened 3 years ago?
W.C. Harlan is still word of mouth. I mean, we haven't put a dime into advertising in the 3.5 years that we've been there. And actually, we say no all the time. When people want to write or do like pieces on it or photo shoots in there, we just always say no. And those are things that people don't know about because those happen behind closed doors. So very different than Clavel in that way. Although Clavel doesn't pay for advertising either, but we do say yes to if someone wants to photo shoot their plants in the space or if somebody wants to talk to Carlos about his cooking, we always say yes. Different flavors completely. When we went in to Remington to open Harlan, we didn't really know much about Remington besides the fact that a bunch of our friends lived there. We went to the auto bar and I mean, the Diz was there and Paper Moon, and I used to live on Howard Street there, but it wasn't really the destination that it is now. It didn't matter what the neighborhood was. It was just this, when we found that space and we saw that opportunity, that changed everything. And we could have been anywhere. We could have been absolutely anywhere. It just so happened that over time, other people discovered that Remington was such a gem, and it has been so good to us because for the most part, there's a really beautiful community there and lots of people doing really, really great things. And there's parking and it's central and it's just very close to a lot of places. It's really a nice and it feels like a safe neighborhood. But at the time, we just didn't know any of those things. We just went in because we didn't care. And we knew that what we were doing, the people that got it would love it and they would come again. And so we didn't need to advertise or even put a sign on the door because we just thought, once you come in, you're going to have an experience, and it's better it be an experience that you have than something that you saw on the internet and thought you already had. And that was with Harlan. How things have changed. I mean, in the beginning, you know, it was mostly me bartending there and a couple other people. We kind of grew it organically. We used to serve stews. We always did the cocktail du jour. To this day, it's never been the same, and it always changes every single day. So there's always a creative process that goes into every day. And we always have done on-the-fly cocktails where you come in, just tell us what you want, we'll make it. How it's changed, definitely we started introducing, just in this past year, themed menus. Because I found myself and my team really wanting to create something and guests wanting to have that experience over and over. I mean, people were photographing the cocktail du jour and asking for the measurement so that they knew when they'd come back 2 weeks later, they could ask for that because they wanted it again. So we thought, okay, let's do cocktail menu as well as our cocktail du jour, but let's make it themed so it's completely creative and we can just do something crazy with it. So, you know, our first menu was based on the poetry of Paul Celan, and now our current menu is based on the National Color Association of 1922. So all the cocktails are color names, and the next menu is actually going to be based on the European Football League. So we're doing different things to sort of collaborate more together, and before that was never available.
What kind of pushback did you receive from the community when you set out to open W.C. Harlan?
There's one community organization in Remington called the RNA, and it's a very small community organization led by people who don't want any commercial business in the neighborhood. Absolutely nothing. It doesn't matter what it is, whether you are a laundromat or a flower shop or a sandwich counter. They just do not want anything. So because of that, another neighborhood organization was created called GRIA, and they sort of spearhead more of a democratic approach to listening to people, seeing if things fit in the neighborhood, and supporting local business owners and supporting growth. Healthy growth. And I had a lot of support from GRIA. I had a lot of support from the neighbors that live next to us. But the RNA fought us, and they've fought us at every move we've ever made, whether it be Harlan or Clavel or changing hours or outdoor seating, every single thing. And they're quite known in the neighborhood to shut people down and to fight people and to drain the pockets of small business owners.
What do you see as the future of Remington? Do you think Harlan and Clavel will stay their own little corner oasis, or do you see that becoming more going forward?
It's hard to say. I mean, right now, there's property around us that is for sale, and I can see that being purchased by investors and turned into commercial spaces within a matter of just a couple years. It's quite hard to say, but I do know that things are moving very quickly for Remington and changing very quickly. There's a lot of building happening. A lot of small business owners are getting opportunities to create spaces and create lives for themselves. And I think that that's a positive thing. And as long as there are people who are using a democratic process and listening and not having ulterior motives or fears, and then they're listening to these business owners, and there's a vetting process, but also there's a support, there's a way to gain support, then I think that everything will be great. I mean, you know, I guess it was a year or so ago when we thought Walmart was going to be coming into the neighborhood. That's the sort of thing you don't want to see. As a small business owner, you don't want to see anything corporate coming around you, and you'd much rather have businesses that you and your peers and your customers would enjoy, that are small businesses that you can support. And that's really been the flavor of, if you look at the neighborhood surrounding us, Hampden, for example, it's filled with small business owners, and look how successful Hampden is. People absolutely, it's a destination for people to go and Christmas shop, or just go and bring out of town friends, or just to have dinner with their family, or it's a living space. And I think Remington is moving towards that. Of course, we don't have an avenue, and I don't think it'll be as dense as that, but I think that it'll certainly be more of a lively place, more of a safe place to be, and there will be a lot more resources for people who live in the neighborhood without having to drive a car and get them.
Harlan and Clavel are kind of a little island. They're pretty isolated from other small businesses and other restaurants. I know that you've said you enjoyed that they're a destination, that they are not, you know, on a block filled with other small restaurants. How did you have the confidence and the security in those businesses without having the benefit of foot traffic?
I think that if you believe in what you're creating and it is good, that no matter where it is, people will come to it. Especially if it's something that is not available to them anywhere else. When you create something different and you believe in it, other people are going to see that, and they're going to believe in it too. And that's why over the years, the places have been successful. You could have put them, I truly believe, anywhere. It doesn't matter. And I think it's because people wanted something like that and they just didn't have it. And sometimes people don't know that they want something until they experience it. And then they learn something. And I think that's a big part of an inspiration for us, is always traveling other places and gaining inspiration and translating it. And I think that people, when they go into the spaces, feel in a way like they're not necessarily in Baltimore or Remington or West 23rd Street. They might feel a little bit transported, and that's what we wanted to do. So I think that's why people keep coming back, and that's why it's been successful.
Where do you think the restaurant and bar scenes in Baltimore are headed right now?
Oh, I think that they're exploding right now. There's a lot of really great things opening all the time. We're definitely heading in a really positive direction. It's hard to, you know, I don't really compare Baltimore to New York or San Francisco or Chicago or any of these other big monster cocktail cities or bar cities. We're doing our own thing, and it's very different, actually, than the other cities. The flavor of how we do things is very different. It feels a lot more DIY. It feels a lot more creative in a way. And I think we're just like the other industries of the arts, of music and visual art and writing and such. I think we're doing something very different, and it's growing very rapidly.
Would a young Lane be surprised where you've ended up now?
Yes. That's a really difficult question, but my instinct says yes, because I always dreamed of that I'd be, you know, living in Europe and be some sort of bon vivant, probably a writer, not running businesses and working the grind as I am now, I think I would have thought that I would be more of a wanderer in the world. But then I think about it, and in a way, I still try to maintain that and do strive for that. And I think I've cut a nice compromise between being that, but then also having these great living creations that are filled with incredible people. It's like I've sort of created my own community in a way, and I feel like I'm kind of in the middle.
What haven't you done yet that you would like to do?
Should I tell? I mean, in my personal life, you know, I was born in the Philippines, but I haven't been back, and I would love to finally go and meet my family there. I've got dozens and dozens of cousins. That would be something beautiful. I've always wanted to go to Vietnam. I've always wanted to travel to the Far East. That's something I would love to do, but I've got some things inside of me that I have no doubt will happen, but there's no way that I'm going to tell anybody about them at this time.
And why is that?
Because I like the element of surprise.
Great. Well, I think that's a good place to end. Lane, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you, Quinn. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to Female Trouble. If you liked what you heard, you can subscribe and rate us on iTunes. We're also on all the other major podcast apps, or you can listen online at baltimoresun.com/femaletrouble or soundcloud.com/femaletrouble. You can follow all of our updates on Twitter at FMLTrouble. Our theme music is Dope Girls by Shifty, featuring Baltimore's own TT the Artist. Thanks. We'll be back next week.